You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I am Christina, one of your hosts, and I'm joined by Kim, my book bestie. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Hello. Anna could not be here this evening, but we have the absolute pleasure of bringing you our interview with Pin Cole, author of The Kindred's Cursed Saga, Spark of the Everflame, Glow of the Everflame, Heat of the Everflame, and the upcoming Burn of the Everflame. Guys, we had so much fun talking to her.
Yeah.
Like, this was, she spilled some tea.
Yeah.
We were giddy. Like, we feel like she's, you know, our new best friend. We had the best time.
So much fun.
We cannot wait for you to hear it. Before that, though, we are going to give a spoiler warning for the three books currently out in The Kindred's Cursed Saga. So spoilers for all of book one, book two, book three, Spark, Glow, and Heat of the Everflame. If you have not read all three, please go finish them and come back. This was really fun to be able to discuss all of them as kind of like the culmination of the series and where we are going into Burn. And it was just really fun to get to talk to her about all the aspects and the overarching plots and journeys and stuff. So
yeah,
we can't wait for you to hear it. And we hope you enjoy our interview with Pin Cole.
Yay! Pin, thank you so much for being here with us today. We are beyond thrilled to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Oh, we are so excited, truly.
We are.
Okay, so diving right in. Pin, during the pandemic, you moved to Paris and decided you wanted to become an author. Please tell us more about that. Like, how did this happen?
Just, you know, a little thing. We completely upended our lives. It was actually the second time we'd done it. So earlier in like 2012, my husband, he works in like tech startups, and the first tech startup that he worked on had just sold, and they were moving everybody to remote work. And we were, you know, a lot younger and we didn't have kids. And we kind of said, I was doing a job where I could kind of do it wherever. And we were like, hold on, if we don't have to live in, we lived in Dallas, Texas, if we don't have to live here, why are we living here? No offense to Dallas. I love Dallas. It's where I'm from. Like,
that's where we're from too.
We're both from Fort Worth.
That's crazy. Yeah, I'm from a suburb of Dallas. Yeah.
Okay, fun.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I absolutely love like the DFW area in Texas. But, you know, I had lived my whole life there and it's a little bit of a bubble. And I just wanted to see the world and like meet new people and do new things. And luckily, so does my husband. And so back in 2012, we like sold everything we owned and like in 30 days from deciding to do it, we were like on a plane to France with like a bag in Jackie Chan and a dog and a cat. It was wild. Wow.
Like, that is so cool. Oh my gosh.
Crazy. And so we were here for like 4 years. And then my husband got a job offer back in the States. And we didn't want to leave, but we decided to do it anyway. And the plan was always to come back to France. But, you know, you make plans and then life gets in the way. And, you know, you look back and 10 years pass. And so we were back in the US. And then the pandemic happened. I was working as an attorney. I was working like 100 hours a week, just like soul crushing, you know, dying inside every day.
Yeah. So yeah.
We both were just really unhappy and overworked. And when the pandemic happened, we kind of looked at each other and said, like, we are not happy. This is not the life we wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, we were happiest when we were in France. And let's just go back there.
Let's do it.
Why not? And so he managed to get a job in France that got us a visa. And so we came back here right smack in the middle of the pandemic. I don't recommend moving during a pandemic period, but like globally, not a good idea.
Not fun.
And France was in a lockdown. You couldn't leave your apartment unless it was for like 5 predetermined reasons, like going to the doctor, going to the grocery store. Like, you couldn't be out on the street to do anything. Wow. And stores were closed. It was crazy. So we were just in this like empty box of an apartment sitting on like cardboard boxes and like whatever.
Yeah. For,
like, months. But it's fine. We have furniture now.
It worked out.
And I couldn't get a job, which was, you know, very scary at the time. But my sweet, sweet husband was like, look, you've been wanting to write books your entire life. Why don't you stop looking for a job and do this instead and give it a shot? I know.
We love this.
We love him. And so it was only meant to be like a year sort of like, oh, I'll dabble in this and see if it works out. Well, 3 years later, here I am. So whatever. It's fun.
Yes.
We are so thankful you did that, Pen.
We are so thankful.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
It is.
Okay. So we asked our patrons if they had any questions for you. And amongst them, we're screaming, this is so exciting. They were super interested to know what the inspiration was for Kindred's Curse kind of in the first place as you were conceptualizing it.
So this is why I never get to say this on podcasts because they're always spoiler free. But the very first thing that made this kind of grow in my head is this idea of what if there's a crown that doesn't pass to, you know, the next descendant of the king or whatever, but it could go to anybody. And literally anyone could be plucked out of obscurity and put on a throne, and like the chaos that would cause every, you know, generation. And, you know, kind of like the lottery it would create of like, well, we don't like the person that got picked, so maybe we try and kill them and see who gets picked next, you know, and
just
the like ripple effect of what that would be like. And so in my head, the book originally started with, you know, this girl walking through a forest and like living her small little life, you know, as kind of a peasant. And all of a sudden she gets this crown and she gets thrust into this world that she knows nothing about. That's like super dangerous, lots of intrigue, and has to navigate her way and try not to get, you know, assassinated by like everybody who wants her crown. That was sort of the seed that everything grew from. And when I first wrote Spark, it actually started with her getting the crown, like second or third chapter.
Wow.
And I like wrote most of Spark starting there. So like actually most of Glow. And then as I was writing it, I was like, you know, I always see these fantasy stories, like very common, where you get somebody kind of plucked out of their little normal life and like thrown into the big city or whatever. But it always happens right at the beginning. And we never get to see their life before that. And we're told to care about their lives, you know, the people they left behind, but we don't see those people. We don't see the village that they were raised in. And so we don't feel that loss or like what they're fighting for. And so that is why I decided actually to make that the end of book one, so that we could see Diem, like her mortal life and, you know, mortal city in the village, and understand what she's fighting so hard for and like why it continues to pull her back and like keep so much of her loyalty as she like moves on to become the queen in Glow.
And that was so effective because we really understood why she was fighting so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her crying when she does her magic the first time and she kind of explodes, like she starts crying because she's like,
right,
I'm going to lose everybody that I love.
Yeah.
That was one of the best moments that you really connect with the DM as the reader being like, I totally get that because she's going to live on and her family is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. And if we didn't have like all of the scenes with, you know, the dad and Teller like sitting around the table and all that, then we wouldn't have cared, you know?
Right.
I mean, yes. We would have sympathized with her, but we wouldn't have felt it ourselves.
Yes,
totally.
And so I think we just needed those family moments and like, you know, we just needed to care about the people that she was leaving and not just her, I think.
For sure. Oh, that's so well put.
Agreed.
So I do have a question about the plotting though. We heard in another interview that you plotted out all four books in like one afternoon. Is that true?
Yeah.
Hey, that is wild. Like, please talk us through that. Like, how did that work?
Plotting for me, I don't know why, but it comes really easily. And I just like the other day I plotted my next series, like my next three book series, in like an afternoon, basically, because it's easy when it's just ideas, right? When all you have to do is think about like, well, this happens and this person betrays this person and this person dies. It's really easy to rapid fire think about like what could happen. Mm-hmm. But of course, the magic is in the details and in like building that out and how it all began. So
Sure. Yeah,
it's super easy for me to say, okay, in this book, like all of these big crazy things are going to happen, but it takes a lot longer to make those things happen.
I'm sure. Yeah. Did you know though, like, so we talked about how you kind of moved Spark, the ending around of that, but how did you kind of, so you plotted like when, what would happen at the end of Glow and what would happen at the end of Heat kind of already?
Yeah. 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 So like I knew, you know, how things would go like in Glow with the challenging and that would kind of be that arc, right? And so her sort of exploring the descended world and what that means, and that the next book would really be about the realm. So originally their names also were different, and like I think Glow was called like Heart of the Everflame because it was kind of like the love story, and then he was going to be Realms of the Everflame because it was really more about like her traveling around.
Yes.
And so that was kind of, each book kind of had like a theme of what she was exploring in each one. And then, yeah, we shifted it a little bit, but I knew each book, it was originally going to be a trilogy and it was going to be basically what now is like Glow, Heat, and Burn. And then I went back and added Spark.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
The whole Guardians arc was not originally in the plot, really.
Okay.
And so that, we added that in a little bit after the fact.
Wow, so it's almost like a prequel. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Me too. That's so neat.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the realms a little bit. It's so unique and interesting. And we love this map.
Love it.
We got so many comments about like, thank her for the map. I love that it's a circle and I can understand it.
It's so easy.
It's like, I can understand it and see it, but it's so unique and cool and different. And like the island in the middle, we loved it.
We loved
it. So how did you come up with this magic system and then like that it's attached to the realms and just like the realms in general?
So I knew I wanted each realm to have, you know, its own kind of theme, right? And have it be, each one be its like very different. And for me, living here in Europe, it's cool how you can go like an hour in any direction, you know what I mean? And be in a totally different place with a different culture, different language, like different values and like different architecture. And even though you haven't gone very far, it's just a wildly different experience, you know, from one country to the next. And so I kind of like the idea of that, even though Amarn's very small, there's so much culture packed into this area. And each one is really driven by the personalities of, you know, the kindred that's sort of the patron god or goddess, their values and all that. And so it was really fun kind of making everybody like turning the personality up to 10 on everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One is still kind of a little bit exaggerated of whatever their personality type is, but then it makes it really fun to travel them.
That was so fun going from realm to realm.
Oh.
You know, there's something I think that fits with like Montios being very druidic and very reclusive, but also like controlling ice and stone, you know, that's kind of very cold and flat. And the same with like Igneos, very fiery people and, you know, being just a hotbed of a lot of kind of violence and activity.
Yes.
Before it was that, it was like a place of warmth and hospitality and like, come sit around the hearth and like, let us welcome you. And so I think the magic in many ways sort of is like a symbolism of the personality traits that they each have.
Oh, God, I love that.
Amazing.
That's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so as a follow-up, which realm would you want to live in if you could pick?
Oh, that's tough. That is a really good question. I don't know. Gosh, I've never thought about that. I mean, I'm very, of course, partial to Lumnos because it's like, you know, home, right? It's home.
Yeah.
I think it would be so fun to be in Umbros and like where all of the sin and the secrets.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And also it's very kind of ironically very equal there. Everybody, obviously you have, you know, sort of the centenaries at the top, but then everybody else is just like doing their own thing down there.
Yeah.
In the markets, and you can kind of be whoever you want to be, create whatever future for yourself.
Yes.
And so there's some freedom in that too. That's kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Very cool. We felt like that too. Like we loved how equal everybody was and that you like pay this tithe and then you can have your magic and you're just free to kind of go about.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's all the different eye colors and magics and people. And like, it's almost like a melting pot.
Yeah. We couldn't answer that either. I think we did pick Lumnos because we wanted to be with like Taryn and Zao.
Yeah. And I was like, I mean, because I want to hang out with Eleanor.
I'm like Luther's there. So where else are we going to go?
I mean, I'll just follow him around.
Yeah. We're like Luther groupies. He's like, okay, this is getting stalkerish. Okay, so we had a lot of questions about what was the most fun scene to write and then what was one of the most challenging scenes to write so far.
I think probably the scene that was the most, any Taryn scene is fun to write, really.
Oh, he's incredible.
We love him.
I really love the scene in Glow. It's like right before the cousins' dinner where DM and Luther are kind of flirting and then Eleanor and Taryn come in and she makes like Luther apologize to Eleanor and Taryn is having the time of his life. He's like, this is the best thing in my life because he's watching Luther like just... Yeah. Wrapped around his finger.
Oh, doesn't she make him kneel? She's like, it's like so good. Yeah.
Taryn's like, this is the best day of my life.
I had so much fun writing that scene. I was dying writing.
So
it.
Funny.
And then also,
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I mean, the the scene in Heat where Zal's calling him all the different names and he's like, makes him the little girl. And I was just like, having so much fun terrorizing poor Taryn.
That part was incredible.
It's not that hard.
It's like the two of them are like little boy pulling a little girl's pigtails and running away. Like that's their relationship.
Yes.
Loved reading them.
It's great. And then I would say the hardest, everybody's going to give me crap for this one. The hardest for me is any scene that Henry's in because I want people to like him and I want people to like understand where he's coming from and like understand his arguments and the things that he says and listen to the content of what he's saying and not just the anger with which he's saying it. I'm not sure that worked out for me. every scene he's in, I probably rewrote 10 times trying to like
really.
Oh, wow.
I can see how that would be tough.
Yeah. He makes us feel lots of really intense feelings. And so that is so effective. We feel so, every scene he's in, I am like, yep. My heart's racing. I'm like, it's captivating.
It is.
You've crafted him to be important and make us feel these feelings, you know, like it's part of the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's important to DM too.
Exactly. Right.
I always say that, like, I think Henry's got three kind of journeys that he's on, right? He's got his journey as DM's like lover and like love interest, right? Then he's got his journey as DM's best friend. And then he's got his journey for his own soul. And you know, as he's kind of losing his morality and his ethics to sort of this cause, and particularly people who are exploiting the cause for their own personal like gain. And I think we have seen by the end of Heat, we have seen the first journey come to an end, right? Like, yes. He and him are not going to be right.
together. Yeah, that's confirmation, people.
If she left Luther in Bern for Henry, I think people would have a very hard time.
He would riot in the streets.
For me, the last book I ever wrote, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we have seen that arc come to a close.
Right.
Now, whether we have seen his friendship with him, like the status of that, and if they are going to come back together or not as friends, remains to be seen. And I think, you know, the journey of his soul, has yet to be seen. Like, we see DM in their last conversation together say, like, don't follow Vance. Like, don't.
Yes.
I'm on the same side as you. We are not enemies. Like, don't go with Vance. And we don't really see what Henry does with that. And so part of what we'll see in Bern is whether or not he took her advice and the fallout from that. So,
color us intrigued.
That's a good little teaser. Okay, yeah, good.
That is a good teaser.
Okay, so characters, speaking of characters, yeah. We know that, you know, creating these really fully developed and nuanced characters is really important to you. And that totally came across in all the main characters, all the side characters, everybody. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about developing their unique personalities and their backstories? How do you, do that so well?
Yeah. You know, like you said, it's important for me for each character to have their own arc and to have a turning point where they have to make a decision that takes them one direction or another, and that kind of determines their fate, right? And in some of them, it's very big, you know, obviously with like DM and Luther and Henry. And with some of them, it's a little bit smaller, like Alix's journey to like not just be the privileged courtois like person who was handed their titles, right? She wants to earn her role. She wants to become, you know, the head of the army on her own by her own merits. And so, you know, we kind of see that journey for her establishing herself on her own. And for Eleanor, you know, it's kind of her coming out of her shell and like seeing her own self-worth as somebody who's been told her whole life that she's like worthless and just kind of a pretty face in the magic. Like, so for me, it's about finding, number one, what that's going to be, like that arc for them, and then crafting the backstory that makes that arc, you know, meaningful, and that gives them their motivations for caring about that. Like, why does Alix want to be this? Or, you know, why does Henry get pulled in to the Guardians and all of that, you know, establishing the things that happened in their past to develop their motivations for that arc. And then once you have that, I think it's just about like being true to those motivations. So there are certainly things that characters do, in particular Henry, that people don't like, right? But it's authentic to him. It's what, you know, a person who lived that life, it's what they would authentically do, even if it makes us mad at them. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. So as a follow-up, this is a question from one of our patrons, Taylor. Okay. She asks, will the next book possibly have multiple POVs? I just love all her side characters and want to know their thoughts.
Yes. We have at least three POVs in the next book.
Oh my God, that's so exciting.
That's really exciting.
I can't wait.
It's a lot more. It's not like in the last book where we had like a a small snippet of one. It's word shifting POVs quite a bit. In the last book.
Oh my gosh.
Thrilling. That's so exciting.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Okay, switching gears a little bit. Something that really stuck out to us in this series was kind of the dynamic between the Descended and the mortals. And it was so complex and it was very powerfully written. Can you kind of tell us like what went into that process of portraying that dynamic so effectively?
So I think the story of like the haves and the have-nots is not anything new in literature. It's a common theme. And so I knew that was something I wanted to play with, but I also, you know, growing up as a white woman in the South, one thing I hear a lot is like, well, it's not my fault. Like I didn't do this. So why should I be the one to pay for like making it right? You know, this was done by people hundreds of years ago. And, you know, I'm not racist or whatever, like don't blame me. And this sort of like abdication of responsibility for making, for like undoing inequality and particularly like the generational effects of it, you know? And so I kind of wanted to take that head on by having some of these Descended that are like, well, like I didn't do anything wrong. Like I'm just living my life here in Lumno City. And have Diem, who's like, no, like, actually, you're contributing to this in a lot of ways, and you're benefiting from, you know, my people suffering, and to show them, like, open their eyes to, like, you can't just put on blinders and, like, ignore what's going on around you just because you're not suffering from it. And so, like, that's why the scene at the end of Glow, where Diem is taking Taryn and Alix around, like, Mortal City and showing them her life and, like, you know, how she grew up, and their eyes are kind of open to like, oh my gosh, you know, this was right down the road from me. It was, you know, a couple of miles away, and I had no idea that it was going on and no idea my role in it. So I really hoped that readers who I think are predominantly from backgrounds like mine could like in this story, they could put themselves into different groups' shoes that they might not identify with, you know, outside in the real world, and explore some of these ideas and like question their preconceived notions in this fun fantasy world where they don't have the baggage of like the real world, you know,
right?
Yes.
Coming into it with all of that stuff on the outside. It's like this fresh blank slate,
yeah,
that maybe that'll plant some little seeds in their head that will make them sort of second guess their approach to those things.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Wow, that is beautiful. I love that so much.
That's very well put. And you did a fantastic job. Like the conversation that Diem has with Taryn and Alix when they're on the run, and she's like, well, so if you were needing food, what would you go do? They're like, oh, well, we could just take it from a mortal. And she's like,
yeah.
It's so interesting how she really challenges them and their beliefs and like the way they just all, well, that's how we've always done it. That's just how it is. And she's like,
right.
But why though? That's not right. It was so, I loved seeing Taryn and Alix come on that journey with Diem and realize, wow, she's right. You know, we have contributed to this.
Yeah. And Lily too, she has some conversations with Lily, like in the Healer Center, where she's like, well, we're not allowed to grow these herbs, you know, and, you know, this can heal our people of a lot of things, but we're not allowed to grow them. And Lily's kind of like, you know,
well, why? What?
Why not? and she's just been told her whole life that, well, mortals shouldn't do that. Like, that's just, they can't handle it, or, you know, we should be able to handle those things. You know, it's for their safety that we handle them. And for Diem to be like, why?
But why though?
And like, sweet, sweet Lily is like, bing, you know what I mean?
Right.
Thinking about things critically for the first time. And it's not that she was dumb or uneducated or didn't care, right? She's like the sweetest, most compassionate person ever.
Angel.
It's really easy to take things at face value when you've been told them by everybody your entire life.
Sure.
And then, you know, the wool is pulled over your eyes and you realize like, oh, wait,
oh, wow,
this is all wrong.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
That was really, really well done.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about Luther and Diem together. Oh my gosh. Wow. 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 Okay. I'm going to tell you, before my journey with the Kindred's Curse, I was like, I'm not really a slow burn girl. I don't really know if it's for me. And I will now be saying, I am not a slow burn girl except for Kindred's Curse. I loved this. This slow burn was so well done. It was like this masterclass in romantic tension. Because I feel like you gave us just enough at the right moments And we just loved it so much. So what goes into like strategies, techniques of one, creating that, but then maintaining it through so many books and pages and events?
Yeah. So I get really bored in books once the characters are together. I just, to me, that's like the least interesting part. That's kind of when I mentally check out. And so I knew from the beginning, I wanted to write a series where they didn't get together until like the furthest possible point. Originally, when I plotted it out, DM stayed engaged to Henry until the end of Heat.
And then, no!
I had all these like heart-wrenching scenes in Heat where she's so Henry and sweet Luther's still pining after her. And like the talk that Taryn has with her, like, what are you doing? Right. That was originally in Heat, not in Glow.
Wow. That would have been.
Thank you so much for moving that up. We really appreciate that.
But I do understand what you're saying though, of like, I want to build this, like, that's not the fun.
Oh, totally. I totally agree. The conflict is what keeps people engaged in like reading.
Yeah. So I sped it up a lot after I got some kind of early reader feedback.
Okay.
Thank goodness, because it's much better. But I love the like tension, the angst, and the yearning of I want to be with them, but I can't for whatever reason. Like, I die for that in books. I love it so, so much. So I wanted to stretch that out as long as I possibly could in the book.
Yes. Yeah. It's so well done. And it gives us so many beautiful speeches from Luther.
Man.
You know, I also think it's realistic for them because like this series takes place for the most part over the course of 1 year. And the first book is, aside from kind of the very, very beginning, right? The first chapter, the first book is just a couple of weeks, you know, or maybe 4 weeks.
Yes.
And the second book is 1 month flat. And so by the end of the second, I just think it doesn't make sense for them to be like, I'm so in love with you, like, you know, head over heels for each other after 2 months of barely knowing each other, you know?
I am with you. I love that.
Yeah.
I think this was, even though it's slow for the readers, I think it was a realistic timeline for them. And especially for Dan, who's very resistant to commitment and, you know, has all of those prejudices against the descendant that she's working through. I think it just was always going to take her some time to like let Luther in.
Yes. And I think that was so well done. Yeah. And I wanted to mention, I loved that you did mates with a choice in this, in this series. I think it was so unique and cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get me wrong. I love fated mates. I'm a sucker for the trope, but it's so much more romantic to me when it's chosen and when the magic isn't about throwing two people together. It's about testing the love and seeing like, is the love that they have like true, unconditional, like, you know, burn the world for each other love. Yeah. And so I just personally find that a lot more romantic and like, and fun. And it also gives a really nice journey for Dan, like I said, and like, you know, getting past her issues and commitment. Now, obviously, Luther knows from very early on that like she's the one. It takes her a long time to catch up to him.
True. But we love that because then it's her choice and it's not like outside forces are pushing them together. It's like, no, she chose this and she chose him. And when you finally get there at the end of Heat, you're just like, yes!
It's very earned, you know? It's earned by the reader. It's earned.
So earned.
Like, we have, you know, bled and cried and
yes.
We have all earned this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, speaking of sweet DM, so, you know, her identity as a healer is such a huge part of her personality. And she really struggled a lot with the idea of you know, I'm a healer and my first ethos is kind of do no harm. And I'm trying to take care of people. But then also I'm now this like very reluctant leader in this very tumultuous world that's been completely upended by her becoming queen. And we love DM, but there was definitely some moments of frustration with her because we weren't used to a female main character not being like, let's get bloodthirsty and let's just like kill people and burn the world down. And she was like, wait, no, I want to heal them. And everyone else is like, DM.
They're trying to kill you.
Yeah. So how did you come up with the idea for DM to have that kind of struggle? And how did you write that, making her so lovable, but also kind of having those frustrating moments?
So her being a healer, like you said, is a huge part of her personality. And it's a big theme throughout the entire series of her, both initially rejecting it, you know, because it was what her mother did and she kind of didn't have a choice but to become a healer. And as I think a lot of people in their early 20s do, they sort of say, well, wait a minute, you know, I think this way politically because my parents did. And, you know, my religious beliefs are this way because my parents, and like everything about my life is sort of comes from how I was raised. Maybe that's not who I am and what I want. And so I think a lot of people can relate to that sense of like, well, if that's not what I believe, you know, who am I? What, you know, do I believe? And so I think she needs that period of saying, no, I'm not a healer anymore. I'm something else. I'm going to be queen. I'm going to do this. And then, you know, of course, ends up coming, you know, full circle a little bit to realizing like, actually, no, that is a part of me and it always will be. And maybe it's not going to be in the exact same way that it was for my mother or how I thought it would be, but like, it's part of my heart and who I am. And so that has been a part of just every choice that she has to make in the book. I think like, okay, somebody in this mindset who like has this kind of heart, what would they do? And you know, people don't always like the answer to that. I know a very unpopular decision that I agonized over and went back and forth about is when she lets Vance go in Sophos. Listen, the choice that spurned 1,000 bad Goodreads reviews. Okay. I know.
Oh no, I would never.
No.
Listen, in my defense, I know. But I actually think that was a really good moment of growth for her because in that moment, she wanted him dead, right? She hated him, wanted him to suffer for what he had done. And she didn't act on it. She didn't, which she would have done in the first book, to right. just like go with her emotional impulse. She said, no, it's going to make him a martyr. You know, it's going to make me the villain to all of these people I'm trying to win over. And, you know, it just does no good. So I, even though I don't want to do this, I'm going to let him go for the greater good and like not go with my emotion, but go with my brain. So for me, that was a moment of growth for her, even though everybody else was very, very angry with her about it.
Well, but that makes sense because you're right. If she had killed Vance, that would have spurned this whole other thing where now he's a martyr and he died for the cause and then people are going to be angry at her.
Yeah, especially with this descended army at her back fighting.
Right.
So, like the optics of that would have been, you know, probably insurmountable for her to, you know, win the mortals back to her side. So
yeah,
I guess we'll see if it works out for her.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a paragraph in, I think where she talks about the cyclical hate. We're just going to all keep going on hating and killing. And it's just going to, and we thought that was so beautifully written and stuff like this is her like trying to break that cycle. She's like, we can't just all keep killing
each other and killing each other.
Yeah.
Speaking of her identity as a healer, when like Taryn is not doing well and she's being really positive for him. And then she kind of steps outside and Luther is like, is it cruel, you know, to give him false hope? And I love the speech where she was like, you know, I've seen positivity and hope keep people alive and heal people. Why should we not give him that choice? And that was one of my favorite moments with DM.
And then later we know that Luther was asking about himself.
You sure do.
No, I'm writing that scene knowing, right? Like, knowing that poor Luther is listening to her words. It's like, we're gonna try.
And he's like, so I am too. Cool. Got it.
He's like,
got
it. We're all gonna try. We're all gonna be positive.
Dying inside, like actually and
like quite literally dying.
Literally. That was so, that reveal, we were aghast. We were like, what is going on with Luther?
We were rabbit holing. We were, you should have seen us, Penn. We were like,
we were lunatics.
Rereading the entire book.
Love
like
seeing the theories. I love it.
Oh. Unhinged.
But that whole journey of then being like, Luther, what's going on? Why won't you let her take your scarf off? Because it's just so different from him. We've seen him this whole journey be so everything for you, my queen. Oh. I'm just, you know, so obsessed with you. And so that juxtaposition was also a really interesting opportunity for us to read DM, be like, I'm going to have faith in you. You've had faith in me so many times. This is me being that person for you, which was so fun to read from her.
Yeah. And she took a lot, I think, from her father in that, you know, in his like speech about how like, I didn't have to know all of her to love all of her. And like, I think that was sort of Andre's legacy is like teaching her that you can love someone without necessarily having to know every single secret they have.
Oh, gorgeous.
Beautiful.
He is such a great character. Oh. That was devastating. So thank you for that.
Yes. Bombs. Sucks. Loved it, but devastation. But you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Effective. Okay. So let's just talk about Luther for 1 second.
Okay.
This, oh my God. Finally.
This man. We're obsessed with him. He's sexy and supportive. And so, one, how did you make this perfect man? But two, what is your favorite thing about him?
I don't think he's perfect. I mean, he's close. He's close. Okay. Yeah. Have you guys ever read Shatter Me, the series?
I have, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. So Aaron Warner is like my man. I love him.
Oh.
And if you have not read the series, this is like the poster child for I hate everyone but her. Like this man hates every single person. Genuinely would happily see them all die. Just absolutely hates humankind except for her, you know, who he would do the biggest simp for, would do anything for her. And I'm a sucker for that trope. And so I always joke that Luther is like Aaron Warner if he grew up and got therapy and like became a little bit more well-adjusted.
I'm right? obsessed with that visual. Oh my God.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
I mean, obviously he has a couple of like his close friends, but for the most part, he does not really care about anybody else. He's like, you know, DM is it. And
yes, right.
that's yes. his entire focus. And he will happily let everyone else burn, suffer, whatever, so that he can be with her. But of course, she doesn't want that. And so that sort of almost forces him to care too. And he does, of course, he's a good guy. But that was that kind of trope of just like, I don't care about anyone or anything else. It's her. That was sort of what I wanted to be the core of his personality, and everything stemmed from that. But what I love is that at the end of Heat, and certainly quite a bit in Burn, we see that like, that's not enough, right? You can't just be a man who just simps after a girl and that's like your only personality trait. There has to be more to you than that. And so in that little scene where they're walking through Sophos and they're kind of joking about their little orchard and their goats and all of that, and we see Luther open up and see, oh, he actually has had kind of dreams of what he would love to do or the life that he would like to have someday for himself. And he's just never really felt like he could speak it aloud and say, I want this for myself, you know?
Yes.
So we're getting to see a little bit of who he is outside of his relationship to DM.
Oh, I love that.
I love that. Having that fully developed, like, oh, Luther wants a goat? That's adorable. You know, like, thing yeah. is really, really special and fun. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, we just really love him so much. We just, a lot of the comments were like, just please thank Penn for writing Luther, because bless you and thank you, because we love him so much.
I think it's like healing for us as women to read this man who would just do anything and who's like always there. And, you know, it just, he's very reliable, right? You can like trust him.
Yes.
Truly, truly trust him. And that's, I think, healing for a lot of women.
It is. And it was so important for DM to, even though she didn't always give him a lot of grace, I think she always knew she could trust him. And that was so important for her amidst the other descended that she could not trust, like for her to have Luther.
Yeah, she did not trust him, but he kept showing up, you know,
exactly.
He was there, and he said, fine, don't trust me. I'm still going to be there. You know, she pushes him away and he fights his way back and just is always there when she needs him, even if she doesn't ask for him. And I mean, we love that.
we love to see it. Yes.
Okay. So we already kind of I've talked about this, but we know we really love a series when we start theorizing, rabbit holing. And that was so fun to do for this entire series, but specifically for Heat, we did it as a read along. So because, you know, we were a little intimidated by the 1,000 pages. So we're like, we're going to break this up.
Yeah.
We're going to read part one and then record our episode, read part two, et cetera. And so many listeners were like, it was hilarious listening to you guys theorize about like what you thought was going to happen.
Right.
And then like, they're listening to you like, y'all are not even, this is not even close. Bless you. But it's so fun as the reader to theorize and deep dive and look for Easter eggs and all that kind of stuff. So one, thank you for being an Easter egg author, because it's such a blessing. But my question is, can you share maybe any Easter eggs or like hidden details in the series that readers might have missed, especially maybe in regards to what we might see in Burn?
There's lots. I can't really tell you because then that would give things away.
That's true. But,
you know, I will say that we have a lot of answers now, but there are still some big things that we don't know.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
That I think maybe people have forgotten about. We don't know who killed Andre yet. And that,
right.
We've got to figure that out before the end of the series. We have a lot of prophecies that have some interesting meanings. I think there is everything you need to know to solve everything is in the first three books. But there's probably some context missing that makes it hard to all put together. But there's, we know now that like the 10-pointed star, right, has been there from the beginning. If you have the printed books, it's been on like every, or not every page.
Yes. But,
and the Arlie sees it on the ground at the temple in the epilogue of Spark.
Right.
And that's like a, for me, it was a dead giveaway. I was so worried that people were going to figure it out. There's also,
yeah. We sure did not.
So cool the way you wrote like the shoe. Threw the match down and she was like, it came back, but also she's scared, but also she got, I got her away. Just like that whole reveal, whole connection being yeah. from the first epilogue. Just that's so neat.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
And there is a clue to who killed Andre that gives it away 100%. I mean, it is a absolute, like, if you catch it, you'll know. And so far, no one I have seen has caught it, which I'm stunned by because I went back and forth in my editor like, am I giving this away too easily? And they haven't seen it. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh my gosh.
And then there's something that, you know, Ursel, our Umbros queen, says a lot of very interesting things. But one thing she says is that prophecies can have more than one meaning. And that is very relevant, I would say.
I'm spiraling.
I'm currently spiraling.
I'm gonna pin it for later, but I'm now spiraling.
Wow.
Her speeches have been very, we have like really.
Oh, we were so all over the place because we were like, well, Luther, I know you really want to leave, but it seems like we need to hear her out. Whatever she's going to say is so important. Like,
I know.
Oh, wow. Just so good. So good.
So good.
Okay. So speaking of Burn, if you could describe Burn in three words, what would those words be?
I would say, let's see, emotionally devastating and growth. Let's go with those.
That's terrifying. But yay!
Emotionally devastating, growth, also growth.
So there's like a plotting sort of strategy. It's like how a lot of people plot fantasy books. And right before you get to kind of the big climax, right, is something called the dark night of the soul. And it's where everything is the worst that it can possibly be. And you think there is no hope left, right? That's where we are right now. We are in the dark night of the soul. Everything is terrible. No one is happy.
Yeah, she's right. She's stuck to the island.
She's stuck like, on the island, you know, yeah.
She's got a sword through her chest, so she's...
She's also dying, yeah. She's not doing well.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah, so, but speaking of Burn, we know that it got delayed, but do you have any insight maybe around when we can expect to have Burn in our grabby little hands?
Soon. I can't really say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reasons that I can't say anything, but not too much longer.
Great.
And when I announce it, it won't be like in 3 months I'm going to publish it. It'll be like very soon I'll publish it. So it's, I'm hopeful very soon.
Yay. Oh my God.
We cannot wait. Also, one more thing. Are you going to do a reading guide for Burn like you've done for the other books on your Instagram?
Oh yeah. Those are vital, I think.
They are genius.
I mean, invaluable.
I love a cliffhanger. Obviously, I love a cliffhanger. And I like not just book cliffhangers, but like chapter cliffhangers, right? I love torturing my readers by having them say, okay, well, I'm going to go to bed after this chapter. And that's it. Just this one chapter and that's it. And then like, yeah, you thought.
You're like, see at 4 a.m. when you're still up. Like, yeah.
And I actually got kind of a bad review on maybe it was Glow, one of them. But somebody saying the only thing I didn't like about this was that I'm a one more chapter kind of person, you know, to read one more before I go to bed. And I couldn't do that with this book. Like, I couldn't just say one more chapter. And the chapters are very long. You know, I write super long books and chapters. And so if you say just one more chapter, that could be 40 minutes, you know, an hour. It could be a very long time.
But it's because it's so good that you're like, I have to keep reading it. Like, that's,
I that's what I think. But the reading guides were to try and sort of mitigate that, right? To tell people where you can say one more chapter and where you should really, really, really stop unless you want to be up till 4 a.m.
Yeah, we call it the point of no return. Like, okay, after this, you just can't. You physically can't.
You can't.
Okay, do you want to do some really quick rapid fires?
Yeah, let's do it. So we had one patron be like, so I need some guidance. How do I get my husband to adopt Good Girl without being cringy or weird? Because I was very into that. I was like dying laughing.
That was incredible.
This is for the Praise King girlies for sure.
You just threw that in sneakily. He was like, so like a good girl. And we were like, did you just say that?
And I think Dion was too. She was like, I'm feeling things. And
I'm having a reaction.
What to do with this? What I love about that, like, that's not just, I mean, it is a little bit for the Praise King girlies out there, but it's also, I think, for like DM, right? She's very sort of bold and she takes control and she's very alpha in her life. But in her intimate scenes with Luther, she takes that back seat and she lets him be dominant, and which is also nice for him because he's very submissive to her kind of outwardly. And in those moments, he really gets to sort of take control. And it's so nice for them to have that sort of role switch where it's just the two of them and they both get to take who they are on the outside and set it aside and be somebody, you know, that only each other gets to see that side of. And that creates a whole new level of intimacy, I think, beyond just like dominant submissive, you know, relationship. It's like a very special kind of intimacy that only they know about each other.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I totally agree.
Loved it. Loved it. Okay. Emily asked, were there any favorite moments that got left on the cutting room floor?
There was, so there was one, supposed to be one in Heat where they go to Umbrose and there, it's still a little bit in the book where she's kind of flirting with like Simmond and the Sittenaries and whatever. And there's one where Taryn confronts her. It really kind of is still in Heat a little bit, but it was just much more pronounced in the original scene. And Taryn's kind of like going in on her, like, how could you do this to Luther? He's in love with you. And like, how can you be flirting in front of his face? Do you not care? And she kind of turns to Luther and she's like, do you want to tell him or should I? Because they're like in on it, right? They're like in cahoots together on this sort of putting on a front. And then Taryn kind of has this like, oh, like I should have trusted
her moment. I love that.
So that didn't, it kind of got taken out. But also, there's a lot of stuff that I haven't written yet. But like scenes that happen that aren't in the book from Luther's POV, because we're in Dean's POV the whole time up until now. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Luther is doing other things off page. And some of them are very interesting things. And they impact the book, what's happening in the book. For example, right in Spark, you remember when DM and Luther are in the King's Chambers and kind of having a moment, and then a guard comes in and says, like, whispers in Luther's ear, and he's like, okay, well, I need to go deal with this, and leaves her alone with the king. That was not just like a cheap plot trick to get her alone with the king. There is a reason that he went off. There is something specific that he did that had later repercussions. We just don't know about it yet. I know about it.
Right.
I really want to write these scenes, either make them a bonus chapter for like a special edition or,
oh my God,
or something. There's a lot of confrontation. There's two confrontations between Luther and Henry that we haven't seen.
Hey, we need those.
We know about them. Right? So when Luther went to let Henry out of the dungeon.
Yes.
Big conversation. And then Luther mentions confronting Henry on the dock on the island, right? After the attack on the island, and that they have kind of a bit of a tiff. So that was also a big moment. I really, really, really hope I get to write those.
Oh my God. Please, Ben, please.
Maybe one of them is already potentially in progress for a project coming out soon. I don't know. Maybe we'll see.
Yes, 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 yes.
Screaming, crying, throwing up. I am so excited about this. I would kill for anything from Luther's POV. I mean,
oh, okay. The Italian bonus chapter that's in my Italian special edition is so good. It's, in my opinion, so good. It's Luther at the end of Spark, the moment he kind of finds out that Diem took the crown. It's so good. I love it so much. But it's only published right now in Italian. And I just found out it will be used for something in English coming very soon. So
yes!
Readers will be able to get that chapter coming this year.
That's thrilling. I'm so excited.
I'm excited.
That's so exciting.
And what a cool moment to see from his POV.
Big time.
Yeah.
And it's like right after the kiss. So he is just this shell shocked and questioning everything. It's great.
Oh my gosh, Pen. That's so exciting.
We'll just take that whenever you're ready.
Yeah. Ready and waiting.
Yeah. I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah.
We just want to thank you so much for chatting with us today. It was literally an absolute pleasure. And on behalf of all of your readers, we just want to thank you so much for this world and these characters. We love them so much, and we cannot wait to see what's to come in Burn.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm just so grateful to everybody who has read the series, talked about the series, shared it. Like,
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that?
Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious.
New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. June is Men's Mental Health Month, and every year, 6 million men suffer from depression. If you're feeling overwhelmed, the strongest thing you can do is ask for help. And BetterHelp makes it easy. Take a short online quiz and connect from home with a qualified therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
I started as a nobody indie debut author with like no marketing budget, no publisher behind me, no resources at all. And the readers have just taken ownership in this series and sort of run with it and shared it with their friends and book clubs and all of that. And so to me, I joke with my Discord, we call this like the little series that could, because it just keeps like outperforming what they say indie books can do, you know?
Yes.
And it's entirely because of just readers sharing it with their friends and like, you know, loving the book and talking about it. So thank you guys so much for talking about it. Thank you to everybody who's taken a chance on the series and continues to share it with their friends. It means so, so much to me.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you, Pen.
Okay, so that was our interview with Pen Cole. You guys, we just had the absolute best time, and we hope you loved it as much as we did. That was so much fun, and we will have Pen's Instagram in the show notes. If you, for some reason, are not following her, you absolutely need to. We will have our Instagram in the show notes as well, Flights of Fantasy Podcast. If you are not following us on Patreon, you absolutely should be, because we have released the full unedited video episode with Pen over there on Tier 2. It's already up for you, so run over there. And we will be doing chapter chats for Burn whenever that releases. So make sure you are following us over on Patreon. That link will also be in the show notes. And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Cheers, friends. Happy reading. Bye.
Bye.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.